Please be seated unless you like to stand for the sermon. I will be standing. I'm very glad to be here. I love your priest. Can I say that? I think she's good for Rockford. And I do love this church. I've been in and out of here over the years. I've been in Rockford as a pastor for 43 years. And I was pastor of Emmanuel Lutheran, the other Emmanuel, on the other side of the river, for 36 years. And so I've been retired for 7 years now. And I'm president of Rockford Clergy, so I really appreciate the place that Emmanuel Episcopal has in the city. And I recognize the creative things that you're doing to connect with people, because most people are not in church. Well, you can see. There's plenty of room. Most people are not in churches at all. And so we have to make some really, we have to be daring and creative. So I appreciate what you're doing. So I want to begin with a prayer on the flute. I pray through musical instruments because I find that I have trouble with words at times. And this is an ancient prayer for the Spirit to be here. In Exodus 3, Moses is a mess. He has he was raised as an Egyptian. He's really a Hebrew, and then he sees this Hebrew in slavery, his own people in slavery, kills an Egyptian, and then is found out and escapes, and he's trying to find a place to hide. He's out with the sheep in the field, and he sees a bush burning, which happens regularly, but it didn't go out. And so he started to come closer, and he hears a voice. And he hears his name, Moses. Don't come any nearer. Take off your shoes, for where you are standing is holy ground. And so I want to talk about that voice. I don't mean the voice that we necessarily hear in our liturgies or the voice that's printed in books. I want to talk about the wild voice of God that's not even in our language. Do you hear that voice? Sometimes that voice often is heard outside in the natural world, where Moses was, where Jesus usually was. He did sleep in the park. In November 1964, I was at Iowa State University, and I was fulfilling a dream to work for the Atomic Energy Commission, and I was working on a PhD in nuclear chemistry and teaching a classes in freshman chemistry. And that was my dream. And it was shattering. First, I got frustrated with the Atomic Energy Commission because they were working on contracts with corporations rather than studying what I was interested in, is what is this place really all about? What about the atom? Then I got disillusioned with Iowa State University when they told me I had to flunk a third of my classes. That's how they clean students out. And I had two classes of nurses that were about to have their careers ended from freshman chemistry. And I was engaged to be married, and I was feeling really wobbly at that point, and things were crumbling. I had been an atheist in high school and went to I was an atheist all the way through college. I went to a church college, probably just to be noticed, because there weren't a lot of them there. And then I was an atheist in graduate school teaching chemistry. So I had no infrastructure in me. And so I was in a kind of free fall, and I'd run at night out on the Iowa country, and I'd run and run, and I don't know what I was running away from or what I was running toward, but one night, late at night, under the stars, in a universe that was foreign to me, a universe that I didn't belong to, that I felt extremely alone in, I heard some words. I noticed there were crosses in front of me and crosses behind me. Well, the next day they were telephone poles. But that night, I was being hounded. And I heard a voice, and it wasn't my mother, and it wasn't my father, it wasn't me. I don't know where that voice came from. I didn't know how to connect to it. And the voice said the dreaded words, "Renew the church." And I hated the church, and I didn't like pastors, and that's how I got to be an atheist, right? Renew the church? So I couldn't comprehend those words and ran away from them the way Moses did. Moses, when he heard those words, hid his face, and then he hid himself. I couldn't really shake those words, so I ended up, started to read the Bible, and I went, even in December, I went to the Messiah performance at my alma mater at Augustana College, and I couldn't shake those words. I finally had to drop out of Iowa State Atomic Energy Commission, and I went back to the south side of Chicago where I was from and sat and looked out a window for a long, long, long time. Didn't know who I was, didn't know where I was going. Couldn't run away from the words. Well, the engagement was shattered as my life was shattered, and thank God I didn't get married then. That would have been, I was a mess. When you're a mess, don't get married. Just remember that part of the sermon. Just don't do it. I tried to run away from these words. Like Moses, I went inside. And the voice stopped. Then I went into theological seminary where we talk about God as if God is not in the room. And we study about God who talked to people, other people, a long time ago. And the voice stopped. And then I got busy recreating a new career. I got busy doing studying scripture, talking about God. Getting into ministries. And the voice stopped. Guess where I found the best place to hide from the wild voice of God? Where is the best place I found to hide from the wild voice of God? Four things I learned. One is go into books. Second is, get very busy. That's why so many of us have trouble being alone and quiet without the little machines that we have that captivate us, is we don't know how to be with ourselves alone. So I learned to get busy, very busy, and I learned that a good place to hide from the wild voice of God was inside a church and inside a clerical collar. Of course, I ended up wearing one for 47 years. But that was the very best place I found. Moses, 3,300 years ago, hears these words, "You're on holy ground. Take off your shoes. Don't you know this is holy, this ground?" And so he did. And I'm going to try that, see if that helps me any. You're on holy ground. Do shoes insulate us from the wild voice of God? Like busyness does, and like ministries maybe, and religion can muffle the sacred voice, like buildings do. You know, Moses didn't have a building over him, and neither did Jesus. So sometimes we forget we're in a universe. Having my shoes off, maybe I can feel the holiness of the earth. Or the hold of the earth. You know how the earth holds you? Feel that? If we can experience God most directly, or the wild voice of God, in the creation of God, have we insulated ourselves from that? With insulated our feet from buildings, inside buildings, closing our ears, or maybe being full of busyness and noise. It makes me wonder how long I had been in exile. I felt like I'd been in exile for my whole life. Maybe it's time to listen and learn not from books, but from bushes. In the creation, the voices are everywhere. I didn't know this. I had never heard this before. Before I went outside, I go outside in the morning, every morning, and if the sun rises, it's a good day. Because I want to be in the universe and I want to hear the voices. What kind of voices do you hear if you went out in the morning? They're out there, you know. Do you have voices in your backyard when you go outside to greet the sun? Could that in some way be the voice of God? Are those prayers to God? Are those for us? When I go outside every morning, there are birds that come and sing to me. So it seems. Because they want me to hear what praise sounds like. So there are things that are outside that have really moved me. One of the things is at night, I never went out at night just to run, but I never heard anything at night. But now I go out at night to hear things like the howl of the wolf, which, by the way, when I play the saxophone, my saluki howls in tune with me. It's a very natural thing. This is the wolf call. What do you hear when you hear the howl of the wolf? Are there other languages that God speaks? Is that a prayer that we could learn how to sing in that way in the night? We could cry out our pain in the night? Or is that actually the wild voice of God in another language? Does God use human language all the time? Like, I heard three words. Or can God speak all kinds of languages and all kinds of sounds? Nod your head if you think I'm really onto something here. Then I'll go on. Any of you go up north and have listened to a loon? That speaks to me at night. How many of you heard a loon outside? They're not in Rockford, but go north a little bit. And I was so moved by that sound that it made me begin to pray. I think it's a prayer. I think that's a prayer. It's also a way of finding their young, too. What better prayer than that is to know where your kids are? Do you know where your kids are right now? You walk out, we have a retreat center in Wisconsin, and this time of year, along the creeks, there are marsh marigolds. Have you ever seen that? Things are popping out all over now. They think that maybe winter's over and they're starting to come out. Marsh marigolds just burst out of, and with this color and this energy. And it's so powerful. And they're facing the sun, just drinking in the photons of the sun and feeling so alive, even if it's only for a week like that. Jesus says, we should be like those flowers. Maybe it's time to bloom. What if we broke our bud and opened? The grip of the earth on my body, I have a different feeling about it now. Feel the weight, feel your body, the body being gripped by the earth. You're being held. Now we call that, what do we call that? Your weight. Isn't that an awful word? How many feel like you're way too much or way too little? You know, it's hard to get it right. Maybe 15 minutes in life, you're just right. Just weigh the right thing. And so nobody wants to know their weight. In fact, I can't find a scale in our house. My wife hid the scales. She didn't want to see the scale. Our weight, though, is what we call, what do we call that in science? Gravity. Now, is gravity our trivial way of talking about something very sacred? The hold of the earth on us. The hold of God and the universe holding us in this life. Throw away your scale and start looking at it like that. In Genesis 28, Jacob is another guy who's a mess. Remember, he cheated Esau, and he's about to get broken limb to limb by his brother. And he escapes, and he's out in the wilderness. He's outside. You know, maybe it really helps to hear the wild voice of God. Maybe it really helps to be broken open and outside. That's why every year I go on a pilgrimage. I almost died in the 70s, and after that, I realized that every day is a gift, and so every year I would go out on a pilgrimage outside, and I was going to go outside and stay outside. I was out on my kayak out in Lake Michigan at night once. I was up at the Appalachian Trail once. I've been in different places. I was on a mountaintop once, and I stay there until God tells me in that wild voice what I'm supposed to do that year for the last year of my life, and I have believed since late 70s that this is the last year of my life. And I won't leave that place until I hear it. And every year I get something. And I try like mad to do that year. So it's coming up to be time for me to go out again. Because I believe that God speaks to us in many, many voices, languages. So Jacob, God can't get a hold of Jacob during the day because Jacob is too busy running away from his brother. So where does God catch us and find us when we're busy? Where? At night, right, when we become unconscious for an hour and a half every night, God whispers to us stories and videos for an hour and a half every night when we can't run away. In concentration camps and places of torture, that's what they would do. They would keep people awake because they couldn't dream, and dreams heal us. So Jacob gets this dream, and there's a ladder. It's going up to heaven and down to earth, and the angels are moving up and down like he's supposed to get connected to God. And so there, this is all God's place. God's got ladders everywhere. And Jacob says, oh, my God. God was in this place, and I didn't know it. This is a holy place. This is the abode of God. This is where God really is. And he cooked a couple of rocks and poured some oil on it, made an altar, and said, this is the place of God. This is where God is on this planet. He just didn't notice that God was in every place. There could be altars everywhere. But Jacob said, this is where God is, in this place. And that's, to me, the most horrendous thing about climate change and the disruption in the climate is that we have polluted, mined, fracked, drilled, scraped, clear-cut the house of God and terrorized the beings of God's heart and made sacrilege of the sacred hiding places of God everywhere. God built a temple, and what did we call it? The universe. God built a temple, and we call it the universe. When you leave this beautiful church, you enter the temple. So you can leave your shoes on in church, but take them off when you go out into the temple. You know, kids like to walk in their bare feet, right? They've got something there. There's something about feeling the earth. There is still time to fall in love with that temple, just the way you fell in love with this church, this building, these people, this priest, this choir, all of this. You fell in love with that. There's still time to fall in love with that temple the same way. We need priests and priestesses now for that temple. We need an ordination into taking care of that temple. It's been abused. And like Jacob said, it's full of the sacred places of God, where you can still hear the wild voice of God. It's still there. I want to close with a prayer, and this is an ancient song. And this is a prayer of celebration and gratitude for the whole creation and for the gift
of life.